Bit of a cloud cover right now, but that will break up before the afternoon. Currently, wind east at 14, 50 degrees Kenosha, 48 in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We are wishing a very, very happy anniversary today to one of the most vibrant and valuable agencies here in southeastern Wisconsin, Racine Vocational Ministry. And I think actually now Racine Kenosha. Vocational Ministry. So that gives us some sense of the expansion of the scope of this great program. 20 years they have been changing lives, helping people find employment and, in a sense, rebuild their lives or help create a happier, more successful new chapter. And with us today is James Schatzman, who is Executive Director of Racine Vocational Ministry, and also with us Heather Bennett, who is Program Director for the Reentry Program. So Heather has been with RVM for 10 years, and she would be someone who is really in the trenches, working very, very directly with the folks who benefit from all that Racine Vocational Ministries has to offer. And so we want to look at their history, we want to look at their present, and maybe talk about their future as well. James Schatzman, Heather Bennett, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Good morning, Greg.
Good morning.
Really glad that you're here. So happy anniversary, and we want to also mention the benchmark of your 5,000th worker placement, which occurred recently, and that kind of speaks to the scope of what is going on here. So, Jim, let's begin with some history. Take us back 20 years to the start of all this, and I'm pretty sure you were on hand at the start of all this.
I was. Let's take it back 22 years. I was beginning to think about what the rest of my life would look like.
And you really were working at InSinkErator?
I was working at InSinkErator, directing the choir at St. Luke's Church. I was on the mission committee at St. Luke's Episcopal Church, and that was how this weird connection began to formulate. I really was just looking for an opportunity to invest more in the community. You know, I'd been busy in different forms of ministry within the church, and I was really thinking what could be the next chapter for me. One of our committee members stumbled on an article about a program called Abundant Life Ministry in Milwaukee. We looked at it, and it just seemed interesting. It was really focusing on helping people on the margins get back into work, and kind of in a not like a job placement agency, but more supportive of the whole person, trying to figure out, you know, what's keeping you in the revolving door of dead end jobs. What are the issues in your home or your life or the way you view the world that's keeping you from being successful? And so in that sense, it was really more about the whole person, not just about getting a job. And it intrigued us. And so we invited the director to Racine to have a conversation. And basically we said, well, let's franchise. You know, let's bring Abundant Life here to Racine. And we worked on that for almost a year. Then we started to get more interest. Interest from funders. We established our 501c3, and we began to actually. We came under the 501c3 of the Lutheran Church, the ELCA, and in the 11th hour, the board of directors of Abundant Life Ministries said we don't feel stable enough to franchise. I mean, really, we were right at the end of our planning process. We didn't know this yet, but within 4 months of opening, they said we're not sure we can do this, which devastated the team because we thought Tom was going to come down and actually run the agency the possibility of my position was really a teaching position. It would be secondary. I'd report to him, learn the business. When they pulled out and we already had two major funders interested in supporting our work, one of which was the Siebert Lutheran Foundation, we just said, we have to move forward. And Tom looked at me and said, I think you can do this. Why don't you give it a shot? Hmm. And I've been looking for something like this to do, but you know, in a kind of a vague kind of a way. Well, it dropped in my lap. And I remember going to my wife and saying, well, what do you think? You know, I don't have to think about my salary. People just pay me. Now I'll have to raise my own salary. You know, we knew, you know, instinctively that a lot of nonprofits fail early on. It's tough to get something off the ground and keep funders excited about what you're doing beyond a startup. A startup is always somewhat sexy you know, it's like something new, it's fresh. And then you got to figure out how to sustain that. But we did. It happened. We had a lot of support. We had a fantastic early committee of pastors and people in the community, two of whom you know pretty well. James Peters was on our initial board, and so was Cara Scatrud, Cara Baylor now. She was Scatrud at the time. And so we had this incredible support. We started and off and running. We got our very first week was very interesting. We were wondering, you know, when you start a business, it's weird. You sit at your desk and you wait for somebody to call you. You figure out how you need to generate some kind of activity. Tom, through Abundant Life Ministry, positioned us to do a job fair for a brand new Jewel Osco store that was going to open. And so we just started with a bang, and there was a lot of publicity. The paper was very interested. The Workforce Development Center, who didn't get this job fair, was stunned, didn't know who we were. They showed up to see what's this group doing, and we were off and running. And so that's kind of how we started in 2002.
Wow. I almost interrupted you kind of in the middle of that to ask for clarification on who is we. When you were talking about, you know, we did this and we reached out and blah, blah, blah. Are we still talking about that mission committee at your church?
Yeah, it started out as the mission committee, but it soon began to expand. And like I said, we had two Lutheran pastors come in. Terry McGugan from St. Michael's became involved. And then they brought some people from their congregations. James Novak, who many people may know, he ran Novak Appliance for decades in Racine. He became interested in what we're doing and came on. And all of a sudden, we had more what was looking like a board than a kind of direction team or a startup team. And from there, these community partners, we had the chaplain from the Racine Jail was fascinated by what we were doing. And he thought this might have some connection to people coming out of jail who could find their feet and get out of that rotating revolving door of in and out of jail. Recidivism rates in jail are huge. They're like 75%. It's nothing like prison. People who go to jail tend to go to jail many times. And it's breaking that cycle, can be kind of tough. It really is a breaking a mindset and an attitude about how you see your world around you. And without unpacking that, you're probably not going to be able to sustain what we sometimes call a pro-social lifestyle.
Right. So that's what we hear so much about in particular, the work that you do with that particular population. But my understanding is that you're not necessarily limited to that.
Right.
So give us maybe a clearer sense of kind of the scope of to whom you are offering these services and how they find you.
People find us now 20 years later. There's a lot of word of mouth out there. And so it's really, I've been fascinated when we see children of people we worked with come into the office and go, my mom sent me.
Wow.
told me about you, or my cousin told me about you. We have two kind of program buckets. One is which is how we started. It's just simply called the RVM Jobs Program or the Walk-In Program. Anybody can come. There's no prerequisites. But the demographics that tend to come are people who have had a lot of entry-level jobs and people who have had issues with illegal substances, drugs or alcohol. People who have had a lot of problems with incarceration, whether it's low-level incarcerations, I shouldn't say low-level, but things like DUIs different kinds of charges. We have a second chance program, which is specifically a program designed to bring people from the Department of Corrections, referred by the Department of Corrections, who have had felony convictions and are on probation. Mm-hmm. So the second chance program is very specific and has to have they have to be referred by the Department of Corrections. So those are the two buckets.
Mm. Before we move on, I want you to just explain a little more about the relationship between RVM and this other agency up in Milwaukee, which in a sense sparked all of this when you heard about their work. So in what ways is what you're doing a direct mirror of what they do, or are there ways in which you took their model but then made it your own?
That's a really interesting question. I still have a very close contact with the former director of that agency, who has become a life friend. Their program was essentially what I've described as the walk-in program. That's what they did. That is all that they did. And they were very good at it. When we took the program, it was a mirror image for about 8 months. And then we saw there were some things that worked better in Milwaukee that didn't work as well in Racine. There were some just ways of the way that we engaged with an entirely new demographic here in a program that hadn't was still pretty young. And so the Abundant Life model was really dependent on the church. I mean, it was completely and utterly dependent on the church. And we found that the community connectors in Racine were extremely interested in what we were doing. The Workforce Development Center, Department of Corrections, they were all extremely interested in what we were doing and wanted to find seats for their folks with us. And it wasn't too long after being in the work, maybe about a year, we started doing some data, close to half of the people who came to see us had some significant issues in criminal background or challenges with the legal system, even if they've never been charged. And so, we started to really think, how can we serve that population more specifically? And so at that point, we started to kind of morph away from what we were doing. The training program that we inherited began to become more of Lori Life's work, another of our key employees, who saw that some things needed to be changed and updated. And so little by little, we kind of became our own organization. And by year three, I think, we looked like Abundant Life on steroids. It was just a larger program. We were seeing many more people, and we were putting a great number more people to work than they had in Milwaukee. And so our staff grew. The Milwaukee office was never more than two people, and now our staff right now, we're currently at eight employees.
Wow. For those of you just joining us, we are talking today about Racine Kenosha Vocational Ministry with James Schatzman, the executive director. And in a moment, we're going to be talking with Heather Bennett, who is program director for the reentry program. Jim, maybe you could clarify this Racine Kenosha matter. I mean, like the flyer you have, and of course, for many years, Racine Vocational Ministry is what we saw. Mm-hmm. But I know in something or other, I read Kenosha snuck in there. Can you tell us about that expansion in scope?
Sure. And that really happened as a result of the Second Chance program. And maybe at some point we can bring Heather into this conversation. In my mind, I've been thinking about moving into Kenosha, and some Kenosha folks had said, we'd really like to have the business here. Is there any way you can expand? And always, you got to get your funding in front of that. And so looking for folks who were willing to put money to make the program happen. At one point, the Department of Corrections kept saying to us, look, their region is Racine, Kenosha, Walworth, and they said, we would love to have you in Kenosha. Our agents are hearing more and more about what's happening in Racine, and we'd like to have that happen here. We developed some relationships, one especially with Tara Wendricks, who is now the Assistant Regional Chief of Corrections, and she was a real advocate in helping us to develop the Kenosha program. We started very, very small. We got a couple of church donations from St. Matthew's and St. Mary's, Lutheran and St. Matthew's Episcopal, and Light of Christ Anglican Church. And it was just enough that we could put somebody in there, point two. You know, one day a week we had somebody coming down to Kenosha. And maybe Heather wants to start to talk about that. She started it at the Hope Council with Guida Brown, gave us a space and said, I'll give you a space and I won't charge you, which really was exactly what we needed. Huh. And so we started that. You want to talk a little bit about the startup?
Sure. So we started with, I think it was 5 or 6 clients in Kenosha. And we were in the small little space and we were inches apart from the clients. But Kenosha has a desperate need for a reentry, and I grew up here. So it was fascinating for me to come all the way full circle and come back, especially since I started at the Hope Council as an intern. And then to be there providing our program that I've been doing in Racine for years was very fascinating. So
yeah,
we were very excited when we first started, even though it was really slow. Racine had been on 10 for years, and then we come to Kenosha and it slowed down a little bit, but we started at the Hope Council and now we're over at the ELCA Outreach Center on 63rd. And Carl Erickson, I met him at a prison reentry fair and was talking to him about the work I was doing in Kenosha, and he said, well, I have a much bigger space if you would like. We also offer clothing and food and all of these things that your folks can utilize if you would like. And so then we moved over to the ELC Outreach Center, and currently we're at about 35 as of yesterday in Kenosha, but it's about to move up there starting today, because we're getting a whole slew of new people as we've moved into full-time starting today in Kenosha.
So that's clients you're talking about that you're working with. So tell us about coming aboard 10 years ago. First of all, were you offered the position that you currently have, or was your entry point to Racine Vocational Ministry something a little different?
It was definitely a little different. I started off at RVM as an intern. So I came there as a gateway intern, which is funny because they don't normally take gateway interns, but they took me, and I had a big aspiration to be an AODA counselor. I thought, I am going to go save lives. I'm a person in long-term recovery, so that was my goal, was to help other people recover from addiction. And so I came to RVM, and I was blown away at all the other pieces that reentry included. As a former reentrant myself, I had no idea that there was these programs out here. So I was just like, wow, this is amazing, you know. So started there as an intern, but then when I finished school, they wouldn't hire me right away because I had to have experience. So I went up to Milwaukee and worked at the Maida House as a living support specialist for about 6 months. And then they brought me back on as an employee. So I started off as a contractor. And then maybe 6 months after that, I became an actual employee. And then I worked under my former boss for maybe 3 years, 3 years or so. And then he left, and then I became – there was – someone had to fill in his position, so I filled in as the program coordinator. And then about 5 or 6 years ago, I became the program director.
There you go.
Some of the smartest decisions we ever made.
Sounds like it. From the very, very good. So let's get a clearer picture of the kind of stuff that you do for the people who come in the door, who just need help. What is the kind of help that they are offered?
Sure. So most traditionally, reentry programs focus on employment. So that is something that makes us a little bit unique. We're focused on the cognitive intervention piece of it. So we're working to help people change the way they think so that they act differently. Mm. And I think that's the simplest way to put it for a lot of people that don't really know what cognitive intervention is. It's basically changing the way that you think. So we take a very relational approach with our folks. So when you come in, it's more like we're sitting down, having a conversation, getting to know them, taking the relational aspect, and then we become their support. And the number one reason, I say this all the time, even to the guys in the prison, the number one reason that people stay home is support. So when they feel supported, even if it's not from family, they tend to do a little bit better. So we're talking about cognitive intervention. Employment is a piece of that because eventually everyone has to work to support themselves. And then just working through those steps. It's a lifelong process. They didn't get here in a day, so it can take a little bit of time, but it's a very relational aspect. So we're mostly doing counseling. I would, in the technical terms, it's counseling.
Mm-hmm. And I would say too that in the relational piece can't be sold hard enough in terms of how we do what we do. And one real simple example is when Heather or any case manager has a new person that they're working with. When they finish their first appointment, as they go out through the agency, they're introduced to everybody in the agency. Hmm. And that's kind of not typical. You go to the workforce development, you're going to meet with somebody, and then you're going to leave. At RVM, we make sure that they know that if they have an emergency and they're in the office and Heather's not there, and they're the only person she knows, they're going to feel lost. Mm. And so, you know, even all the way up to the director, you know, if somebody comes in and they need assistance, we're there to make sure that they can be helped. They know that they have a support network. They don't know that they can reach out to the people that report to Heather or report to Lori. That this is an environment where you as a person are important. And people often ask us, well, you're a ministry. You know, I don't hear a lot of God talk. Mm. Well, you know, our ministry is somewhat shaped in a Mother Teresa kind of way. You know, she would say things that got her in trouble with the Pope all the time. You know, you pray to your God, I'll pray to mine, and everything will come out okay. You know, somewhat controversial. But the tone of that is a little bit who we are. We're not proselytizing. We're not doing prayer groups. But we really, and I'll just say this, we really do love the people that we work with. We develop these relationships that are life-giving and life-supporting. We're not just either filling information into a bucket, or we're not just helping somebody meet their transactional needs. In order for the transformation to happen, for people to be squarely on their feet, they have to know that people in their circle really care about them. Jim Wilder, a psychologist, says sometimes, you know, can you be the person whose eyes light up when they come into the room? Something happens in our brain when that happens. You know, when you're a grandparent, you get this. All this, it just hits you in the face that when your grandchild comes in and you light up, they light up. Something happens in your brain that is not just a one-time thing. Our identity centers are mirrors. They're not. It's not that we just figure out who we are. We know who we are based on how those around us perceive us and feel about us. And when people around you care about you, they take joy in the fact that you're coming in to see them. This is not drudgery work. We're really developing relationships. And when that happens, people begin to, their attitudes begin to shift about who they are. And once that happens, their feet start to get more solid under them, and they're more ready to take a tough step to a new way of learning, a new way of thinking. That can be a real challenge in their family system. But that the fact that they have people who just really care about them, whose eyes light up when they come into the room, gives them a basis to work from that, frankly, we all need.
Right. And I'm sure we're sometimes talking about people, not in every instance, but in many instances where they don't have that. I mean, they probably have the opposite, that when they walk in, people roll their eyes or, you know, kind of grit their teeth because they're expecting something very unpleasant or whatever. And
even in their family systems.
Sure.
And this is where it really
especially
gets,
there, maybe.
I should say to people sometimes that, you know, your folks, your parents, or your brothers and sisters, maybe the last person you stole the TV from to get their fix before they went back to jail or prison, they're not always all that happy that you came back.
Wow. So when we're talking about working with somebody, and for instance, in the whole matter of counseling and so on, what kind of expertise do you and your staff bring to that particular task? Because, I mean, the way you were framing it just now sort of feels like something that just about anybody could do. Mm-hmm. I mean, that piece about making people feel welcomed and cherished and so on. I mean, you don't need a certificate on hanging on the wall for that to be possible. But to take it to that next step of changing their thinking and that kind of thing, what kind of expertise and training do you have in order to offer that in a really meaningful way?
I'm going to punt this to Heather in just a second here, but to talk about two things that we look at that really have helped us as an agency. Something we sometimes refer to as lived experience. In the business, sometimes they call them subject matter experts, people who have had to walk that walk before. But also, the other area is the cognitive intervention training that Heather's received from at the University of Cincinnati, which is a leading institution in the area of criminal science. And so I'd like to have Heather talk a little bit about those two areas.
Sure. So we use a tool called ORES, the Ohio Risk Assessment System. It's evidence-based. It basically captures a person's risk to recidivate, right? So someone will come in and we need to figure out what their risks are. Are they low, medium, or high? And part of the piece that, I don't know if it was said or not, but we actually only work with medium to high risk to recidivate individuals coming home from prison for second chance.
Oh.
So these are folks that the Department of Correction has established that they're high, medium or high risk to return.
Wow. So you're taking on tougher cases.
Yes.
And doing so consciously and purposefully.
Mm-hmm. Intentionally, for sure.
Yeah, wow.
So what do we bring to the table? Well, we treat addiction as not just a drugs and alcohol thing. We treat it as a behavior. So we're experts, I call us subject matter experts, in addiction and behavior. So you get individuals coming with drug addiction, you get individuals coming with criminality. We treat that all in one bubble as an addiction. And so that is how we start to focus on changing the behavior. But this population doesn't just allow you to do that. This is where the relational piece comes in. Because if they do not trust you, they will not talk to you. So we focus a lot on relational first, and then we get into, but as we're doing that, we're getting into the hard work and building that trust with them to get breakthrough some of these narratives, lifelong narratives that they have. One of my interesting pieces I use for people that aren't familiar with addiction, and a lot of people will say, well, they should just stop using, or they should just stop doing this. And then I'll say to a regular person, have you ever tried to diet? You know, how did that work out? Oh, it didn't work for you. Why was that? You lost the weight, but then you gained it back. It's because you didn't change the way you thought about food. And so we're working to help people change the way they think about these things so that then they behave differently. There's where all that ties together, you know, but it's a process and it takes a little while. We make it sound very easy. It's a very lengthy process, though.
Well, I should think. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, as Jim is talking about, you know, that love is a big part of this, I should think, while that's completely true, And in fact, that's a piece that we probably couldn't talk about too much. I mean, and it is something that's probably missing from the equation in a lot of other places. On the other hand, I suspect that we are talking about what sometimes gets called tough love. That is, it has to be love within the framework of seeing somebody clearly for who they are, for seeing past the deceits and sometimes having to speak very plainly and straightforwardly to them. I mean, this isn't just rainbows it isn't that necessarily that kind of love. That's probably not enough in many of these cases.
That's where the lived experience comes in, right? That's where we're able to keep it real, so to say, with our folks and just speak the plain truth. And they actually appreciate that. They don't, you know, when you're giving tough love out in a compassionate way, they feel that and they respond to that. You know, you can take the toughest of street gang members and put them in our offices, and we're able to connect with them and work with them in a way that you would never imagine, because we keep it real with them. So that's the benefit of the staff that we have. We have a whole team of lived experienced individuals. So yeah, we're able to connect with them on a different level and an understanding level, but also an accountable level. Like, someone has to hold us accountable.
Right.
I would say then, on top of that, you know, it's not love to not tell the truth. You know, it's. I love this quote by Joan Chittister, a nun from England, who said, you know, Christianity isn't about being nice, it's about being real. Mm-hmm. And I think in America, we have this idea that, you know, being a good Christian is just being exceedingly nice. It's never saying anything that will make somebody uncomfortable, because that just wouldn't be nice. In this work, the truth is essential. And helping a person to realize that, you know, their behaviors that they've done are not who they are. So there's an identity issue that needs to be sorted out. You know, none of us want to be defined by the worst day of our life.
Right. I'm a screw up.
That's right. That's right. Or I screwed up once, therefore, you know, that's just who I am. You literally take that on as an identity. Not that I've made a mistake or that I've screwed up, but that I am a screw up. That has to be unpacked, because, you know, the faith-based part that comes through is we believe that everybody was created in the image of God. You know, and as Psalm 139 says, you know, that we were knit together in the womb by our Creator. That has implications. And we weren't knit together in the womb by the Creator of the universe to be a bank robber or a murderer. That's not the intent, was not the intention of the Creator. And so, you know, without getting preachy to our folks, we understand that their identity is rooted in something beyond them and greater than them. And this gives somebody who's really led a life of some serious criminality, or still has nightmares about the person they murdered, you know, that this really helps them to realize that and to begin to find that place where their feet are squarely under them, where they understand that they're a creation of God. And the implications of that are that they can be forgiven. I had several clients over the years who were convicted of manslaughter or murder. And the example I would use to them is the Apostle Paul. I have dubbed him amongst my clients as the patron saint of murderers. And that was Paul's life. You know, he was a zealot. He was, you know, rounding up Christians and having them executed or imprisoned for nothing more than being a Christian. And so, you know, when God knocked him off his horse, he didn't say, "This is the day of reckoning. You are so screwed." You know, he said, "I have need of you." That's a powerful message to somebody who has been highly antisocial and is really guilty and feels like they can't change their lives because that's who they are and they'll never be anything different. Nobody will ever see them different. When they realize that God took a murderer and placed him as one of the most important people in the early church and, you know, a writer of a good portion of the New Testament, it's like they've been in the church. A lot of these folks have been in church their whole lives, never made that connection, never made it. And so there's a again, Paul was a missionary with lived experience, as we talked about earlier.
Right. He wouldn't have been Paul without being Saul.
That's right.
He brought a lot of that past into what he did.
So the fact that we understand that, you know, gives a certain level of very deep respect, and that feels even not quite strong enough, but a very level of deep respect and hope that whatever they were knit together in the womb for is recoverable. And so, although we don't preach that, we act that out, we live that out, and every day we're telling people, this is not the end of the road for you. You're not defined by the worst things you've done in your life. That's love.
Yeah. We're speaking with James Schatzman and Heather Bennett about the work of Racine Kenosha Vocational Ministry, celebrating its 20th anniversary and recently its 5,000th worker placement. So beyond all of this incredibly important work that we have been doing, that we've been talking about, the work that you do, there is also this matter, far from mundane, of placing people in employment, which can be, in a sense, maybe not the full culmination. I mean, even there, the work, the hard work does not end. But talk for a moment about that piece of this and how that fits into what we've just been talking about.
As Heather said, it's really it's a little bit downstream in the process, because we're not a contract agency. Somebody's not coming in. We're saying, gee, we got 50 jobs available to fill today. You go to that one, you go to that one, you go to that one. That's the work of a contract agency, is to quickly find people that they can turn around and turn back in. We are not a quick process. We are a process of life development, which some experts would call soft skill development. Placing a person in a job whose mindset is riddled with criminality is a recipe for disaster. They just don't make it. You know, they their supervisor criticizes them, and they want to take them out in the parking lot. You know, they're thinking in a whole different frame. So they think this. You know, if you've been in gang life, the whole idea is rule by domination. It's the old Roman rule of rule by domination. You got to be the strongest, smartest, or cagiest, or toughest guy on the block, and you always have to keep asserting that position so that you feel safe. It doesn't work in a job. You can't go into a new job and try to assert your toughness to everybody there. They'll let you go in hours. You will not make it. And so really it's about, again, it's about thinking about your world in a whole new way. If you go into that job, even, and we find very often that people are not just wanting to assert that they're tough, they're also, they have a lot of fear underneath that they're just not going to be able to make it in a pro-social world. These people are really square. They don't talk like me. They don't understand things like me. And so I really don't fit, but I'll try and make it. And if you don't fit into a team, again, you're just making it harder for yourself to move ahead. So really it's about it really beginning to shape your worldview that has hope at the end of the line, rather than imminent disaster at the end of the line. And that's a hard thing to change in somebody's life when they're rooted in that negativity that says, you know, I can get something for a time, but it's never going to last. You know, that can undermine you as well, and undermine the decisions you make that cause you to look like you don't fit, or you don't care, or you don't want to be here.
Right.
And so that's why we try, especially in the Second Chance program, but also in our other programming, to make sure that people understand how you fit in a team. What does that mean? How do you, you know, how do you build a team? How do you break into a closed system? You know, whenever you come into a team, you're kind of the oddball for a while, and no matter how good you are, you got to fit in.
You better be able to handle that that sensation.
Yep.
It sounds like one of the things that is important here is knowing when somebody is ready for this step. I mean, to not put them in prematurely into a situation they're not prepared to handle. And there's a lot of reasons to be careful. I mean, one of them is for their sake. That's probably the most important thing, but also for the sake of your agency and your reputation and so on. So talk about that piece of it, that the assessment of knowing, or at least thinking, you know, that somebody is ready for that next step.
Sure. So in Second Chance, we tend to try to find out what someone enjoys doing, right? So, because when you're excited about something, you tend to want to do it more, right? And working, especially with our drug dealers, they have a really hard time with money. They will never make enough money. You know, the drug dealing world is very prosperous. They make a lot of money very quickly. They don't have to do a lot of work. They don't report to people. they just so changing that narrative has been very tough. So we tend to see people a little bit more ready when they're making their appointments, they're doing their what we give them homework. My homework is always really fun, but I give them homework, and when they're starting to do some little small goals that they're achieving, the reality is that everyone needs to make some money. You cannot survive without having an income, so we have to find a way to get them moving a little bit quicker. I do tend to try to get people into a path of career versus, you know, I'd rather have one job than 10 jobs, you know.
Right.
And then when you like what you're doing, like I said before, you tend to want to stay there.
Sure.
So, and we want them to move up. And so finding out what their interests are, keeping them engaged. If they're engaged, then we would push a little harder for the for the job readiness piece.
And by the way, what are we talking about when we're talking about homework?
So I tend to give people things like bucket lists and goal, little small attainable, achievable goals, because a lot of these folks have never completed anything they've started. So you give them something small. We work really small first, and then you can move into the bigger goals. Most people think that goals are like, my five-year plan is to own a home and do this. We're talking about in 2 weeks, what are we going to get done? You know, in small little increments, and then we build that up. It's just like building your endurance. So,
right.
And then bucket list is not your typical bucket list. I'm over here asking them to do like, what are things that you've always wanted to do in life that you've never done because of your lifestyle? So an example I love to use is I had a really from the street gang member, former gang member, just as hard as they come, said he'd never watched the sunrise ever by himself. So I told him, let's make that a reality, you know, go do that. And he's like, no, I'm not doing that. It's not for me. That's what girls do, you know. And one day he decided he was going to go do it. So he did it. And then I came back and I said, okay, so tell me what you were thinking about while you were there, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he said, I wasn't thinking about anything. He said, for 15 minutes, my brain was completely empty. And I was like, right, because we found some peace. And now he does that every week. You know, so this is, we're trying to find other ways for them to clear their mind out. You know, meditation doesn't work for everybody. So we're finding different ways that increase their joy in their life. So, wow. And that creates change. See, it's a big circle.
Absolutely.
That is a fundamental of what we do, too, this idea that you create more joy moments. And it those memories and those times that you're doing something, whether it's alone or with somebody, can change your perspective out of that negative mindset. And even for relatively healthy people, the opportunity to rehearse and remember those moments of joy in your life, which we sometimes will share over coffee or a beer with friends, you know, is not always something that a lot of people know how to do, or it's not been built into their lives. And so it may be as simple as take your kids to the museum. You've never been to a museum. You know, the museum is kitty corner from RVM, you know, and they'll go, oh, I never really knew what that building was.
Wow.
You know, never thought to go in.
Hmm.
And you know, and to take your little kids and have, and they don't have things, they feel like they don't relate to their kids. They're not sure how to make that connection, especially if they've been gone to prison for a while. And it's like, take them to a museum. Take them to a park. Take them swimming. Take them, you know, you give them these, this is the kind of goals Heather's talking about. So what are our goals for the next month? Here's, you want to do an activity with your kids. You want to do something you've never done before, and do something which we sometimes lump into a bucket called pro-social activities. You know, things you can do without harming the community. That are equally as exciting or interesting. Maybe they've never been to a baseball game, or things like that. And so you get folks going into the community and participating with the community in kind of what I refer to as life-giving ways, rather than life-draining or life-harming ways. And that begins to change somebody.
Yeah. So the job piece, so does RVM have, in a sense, employment partners with whom you work extensively, or when it comes to that piece, then are you kind of looking for jobs the way most people are looking for jobs?
We tend to be at our best when we're employment coaches. We don't have a lot of partnerships, and actually COVID did a real number on our on our ability to work closely with employers. So we're in the process of rebuilding that piece. We've always had several employers that have worked with us until COVID hit. We developed those relationships. But basically, we're teaching people how to fish. You know, we're going to – here's how you use the market. Here's how you network. Here's how you interview in ways that you're going to, you know, up your possibility of getting the job. Here's you know, in the interview, do you have a couple of good questions to ask about the company? You know, do you understand that you're also interviewing the company? They're not just interviewing you. You know, there's two interests here going on, and you don't have to be embarrassed to ask for, you know, what this company has to offer you in terms of maybe paying for schools classes at Gateway. Do they have an educational program development for their employees? You know, how do you promote within this company? You know, do you generally promote from the outside, or if you promote from the inside, how do I position myself for that? What kind of education do I need? When you start interviewing like that, rather than, geez, I just hope I get a job, you know, the employer becomes more interested in you because they look like somebody, you look like somebody they can invest in. And so, you know, over the course of time, you know, we've helped now over 5,000 people get connected to jobs or education. And this is just the first step for folks. A lot of folks we see fall into this demographic where their reading levels at the third or fourth grade level, their math skills are almost never above fifth grade level. And that's going to really challenge you in the job market.
Sure.
May even challenge you in filling out a job application.
Right.
And so, you know, we coach people through those kinds of things. We help them get their GEDs or HSEDs. We've paid for a lot of courses at Gateway to help people get their general education under their feet, as well as helping people to get some of the certificates that are offered at Gateway, which now the industry is beginning to shift a little bit, you know, away from this idea that everybody needs a four-year degree or even a two-year degree. Do you have the proper certification to do the job that will work here? Certificates you can get in anywhere from, you know, 6 weeks to 30 weeks, and you have a certificate to do a living wage job. You know, there's a shorter path if folks are willing to put in the time and allow themselves to be mentored and supported through a process they probably didn't do very well in. One of the elephants in the room with a lot of our clients is their school experiences were terrible. And there's a lot of shame and anxiety around what it means to be in a classroom or to take a test. And so the idea of getting somebody in this population to just say, hey, go to school and everything will be all right, it's kind of you just terrified them.
Right.
You know, and they're trying to be cool and collected, but, you know, so they need more support. And if you can get that support around them, which is part of it's just talking to somebody like Heather every week and going, yeah, I'm still struggling. Well, have you looked at the services available for, you know, for school support? You know, Gateway has a lot of supports in place for students to keep going. And our folks just don't know about that stuff. And they're afraid to ask for help sometimes, too. They think that's very uncool. To ask for help. And so Heather spends a lot of time.
So Heather tells them what's really cool.
Yes.
Yes, I do.
Jim, real quick, if people are inspired by this story and want to help, what is the best way for just people out in the community to be helpful to RVM?
They can call me at RVM at 262-633-8660. And we can talk about, we sometimes have opportunities for people to talk about their life story to our training classes. We've done a lot lately. Again, COVID stopped a lot of stuff, but we're starting to get that back online. Folks can, we've had in the past, we've had people who can support people helping them make resumes. We've had people, mostly program people who've gone through who serve as mentors. It's somewhat of a clinical practice, and so there's not a lot of places for volunteers to hook into the programming itself. We're always looking for monetary support. If this sounds like something you didn't know about and you're interested in helping us to meet more people and expand our services, you can always reach out to us. We'd be happy to talk to you.
Very good. Again, that phone number, 262-633-8660. For Racine Kenosha Vocational Ministry. And at the helm, Executive Director James Schatzman, and in the trenches working so hard in this important work, Heather Bennett, Program Director for the Reentry Program. Thank you both for the work you do, and thank you for coming on the morning show today to tell this important story. Happy anniversary to you and everybody at RVM.
Thanks so much, Greg.
Tomorrow on the morning show, I'm excited to put into the guest chair our own Dave McGrath, the news director here at WGTD. He's going to be talking about his first novel, which was just published, a novel called 24 Hours from Tulsa. That's the title of one of the biggest hits of singer Gene Pitney. And his novel is the fictional backstory of how that song came to be written. We'll talk about that tomorrow on the morning show. Ahead of us today, a mostly sunny day, a little bit cool with a high of 63 degrees. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha Racine, Elkhorn in Lake Geneva.